This is the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
The NCAA, I guess, listened to some of my truth bombs from last Friday, where I said, hey, guys, the season's going to be a little bit different. Maybe you should approach it a little bit different, too, especially if, and a lot of coaches will tell you this, I think Mike Krzyzewski was the one who said this straight up earlier in the summer, we need an NCAA tournament. We can't go without one. And what did the NCAA announce over the weekend, and a lot of this coming kind of into more focus yesterday, that the NCAA tournament is going to be taking place at a single site as opposed to all over the country. It's the wise move, Giglio. It's going to be in Indianapolis. It's easy for them to pull it off there because they got the sort of facilities. They've run it there before, and this was the right choice for them to make.
Let's get a little wacky, too, while we're at it.
Let's do it.
Maybe bring some more teams there.
That's the next step, isn't it?
I mean, the ACC coaches recommended inviting everyone. Maybe that's a little bit too much. I don't know, but how about we double the field at least? 128?
I'm fine with that because, as we're going to find out, if we think it's going to be difficult to address a college football playoff and the four teams that are going to be in it, given the lack of data.
What are they doing, by the way?
Nothing.
College football.
They're not doing anything right now.
I mean, they should shut down right now, give us a 16-team playoff, and move it along.
I don't disagree with that, but we both know that that's not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen. The TV doesn't want that to happen.
But college basketball would like more inventory, don't you think? You talk about TV, right? The whole reason why we're even doing any of this stuff is because we need TV inventory. If you look at the consistency with why sports is being played in a pandemic, is because contracts.
We, the schools.
Everybody needs the
ESPN,
money.
ESPN. Everybody does.
Everybody needs the money.
WRL, yeah.
ESPN needs the inventory so they can sell to advertisers and get ratings, okay? The leagues need to play the games because the television networks aren't going to give them money unless they play said games. This is the reason why the NBA is playing 72 games in 4 months, and they're starting the season when they started because there's obligations related to the regional sports networks. What's the old Wire line? You watch The Wire, right? Follow the money? I can't say the other Wire line, which the representative goes.
Where's Wallace?
Yeah, no. Oh. Don't bring those memories. Don't bring those memories. No, but if you follow the money, everything goes back to we have to do these things because we got to pay the bills. And that's why the NCAA tournament, it's important that this thing happens one way or the other, because it's not like they can cash out on their insurance policy, which wasn't all that great anyway, earlier in the year. So they're going to do this thing. I think it's a good idea. But as we're coming to find out with the college basketball season starting up, what, in a week? It's next week, right?
8 days.
8 days?
25th.
Okay. Look, man, the NBA draft is sneaking up on me.
Tomorrow.
What?
What?
I totally forgot about that. Wait a minute. You're telling me that Vernon Carey played at Duke last year?
He did.
I don't believe you.
And Trey Jones.
I don't believe you.
Cassius Stanley.
Doubt it. Show me proof. I don't remember any of this. People were talking about, I almost feel like we could play a game, especially with Duke, because they've been bragging about all the lottery picks they've had over the last 7 years, which is awesome. That's cool. Maybe that streak ends tomorrow. I have no idea. But I almost feel like we could play a game with people going, do you know what year this guy played at Duke?
Other than the 15 team?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people are going to have a hard time matching years. Even Zion, right? You're going to have a tough time matching the years to the corresponding time that they were at
Duke. Who could forget that year?
No. I'm not saying you're not going to forget him.
Okay.
Don't confuse me.
Okay.
What I'm saying is it's difficult to match a player to a year when there's not a banner attached to it. And by that, for Duke's case, I mean, because they did win the ACC that year.
Yes.
It is, did you go to the Final Four? Did you win a national championship? Duke did that in 2015, so we remember Jahlil Okafor. We remember Justice Winslow. Mm-hmm. We remember Tyus Jones.
Mm-hmm.
We can name those draft years, right? But you start throwing Jabari Parker in there.
I don't know.
Even Jason Tatum.
Don't know.
You're going,
don't remember.
I know you were Marvin Bagley. I know you were there. I know you were really good while you were at Duke. But what year was it? Not sure.
When was Wendell Carter there?
Wendell was there with Marvin
with
Bagley.
With Marvin. That's right.
And Grayson Allen.
That's right. These are all things that all kind of run together. regardless on
I
that.
I could cheat on the yellow pad and tell you the actual year, but that's my point.
Nah, that's
you
the
have
point.
To look it up.
That's the point. That's the point. That's kind of like what's going on with college basketball, how long it's been, and it's so out of mind, right? But I think that what we're witnessing right now with about a week to go before the start of the college basketball season, we've already, you know, Jim Boeheim, Syracuse head coach, tested positive for COVID. You got the amount of traveling that takes place in a week, and what are we going to end up with? Contact tracing and players being taken out. We could have entire weeks wiped out. And if we're looking at a weekend in the SEC where, what is it, 4 out of the 7 games ended up being postponed, as we're coming to find out with Miami. I know this was announced yesterday with the Miami Hurricanes. They've had 2 games rescheduled because of their COVID tests and the contact tracing. Was it Manny Diaz, the head coach of the Miami Hurricanes, said yesterday or after their win against Virginia Tech that they were on the brink of not even playing this game, which they ended up winning. And now they find themselves in situations where they have to postpone. This is just football that takes place once a week, and you're already seeing the scheduling crunch that's taking place. College basketball is under this idea that they're going to be able to do their Champions Classic. They're under this idea that everybody will be able to participate in their MTEs, their multi-team events. They're under this idea that 20 conference games in the ACC, oh yeah, sure, that's going to happen. And there's no wiggle room. The ores that you see in the ACC schedule, as we pointed out when the ACC schedule came out last week, those ores are for what, Julio? Television.
Oh, yeah, TV. I'm sitting here trying to look up the last time the NBA used to tape delay the finals, Joe.
Yeah.
Looks like up until 84, the Western Conference finals were on tape delay. It's because I'm sitting here thinking to myself, what could college basketball do to make this work? Why not, Joe? Tape them.
Tape them.
Play them. Tape them. And put them on Tuesday and Wednesday.
It'd become like The Bachelor and The Bachelorette, where you got
You can edit them.
You got shady websites that are giving you spoiler alerts. It's like, I don't want to give anything away, but if I go to this one website, I can tell you who got the rose tonight.
Wes Durham and Roddy Jones and all of our friends, Jordan Cornette, they could host the games. You wouldn't need play-by-play. You just tape it and just have them cut in and be like, wait a second, you got to watch this dunk coming up in 2 minutes. Who's going
to
get the rose?
No. I would love to talk to Wes Durham of the ACC Network ahead of a game he's already called and him try not to tell us.
So
he's like, here's what you guys need to be on the lookout for tonight. Oh, okay, let me write this down.
Well, think about how the youths ingest information now, right?
Yeah.
On YouTube clips.
It's all
Why
clips.
Wouldn't just turn the broadcast into a YouTube clip?
Even better. You do the whole entire game in 60 seconds on TikTok. Dudes are putting together entire movies on TikTok in 60 seconds. Why not a whole game in 60 seconds?
We solve more of the world's problems on this program.
We do.
Than anyone else.
All live on the air. That's the best part. It's the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. Mitch Barnhart, who is the athletics director at the University of Kentucky. He's also on the NCAA selection committee. And he was just open about this in the NCAA's announcement about moving all of the tournament sites to one location in Indianapolis. And he said it was just unreasonable to expect they'd be able to do that all over the country, given what's going on.
We coalesced around a decision that we were not going to be able to host the tournament in 13 different sites. It was just through the pandemic, it was unreasonable to expect that. We've had an opportunity to monitor other sports championships and sports leagues and things that they have done to try and have success in running their tournaments and their leagues. And we felt like getting to one geographic location gave us the best opportunity to do that for the safety and the health of the participants, the officials, and all of the workers that are putting that thing on, just to have an opportunity to get a really, really special championship and crown a really, really special champion in 2021.
That's Mitch Barnhart, the AD at Kentucky, who's also on the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee. He also was asked about the expansion of the field. If you've been listening to this program, you know that we are all about the expansion of the field. We're wholly on board with what the ACC coaches suggested before the start of the year. And maybe it's not too late to revisit that. These things can be a moving target. But when Barnhart was asked about the teams in the tournament, he pretty much stood pat.
That's the number. It's been the number we've been focusing on. We're very focused on having 68 participants and having an opportunity to have them progress through the tournament to crown a national champion. So that's where we've landed. And we've talked about a variety of different ways to organize our thoughts, but it has always coalesced around 68 teams, nothing else.
Again, that's Mitch Barnhart, the AD at Kentucky on the NCAA selection committee. The the curiosity that I'm going to have is how many games are they going to try to play at once we get to March at the various locations? Lucas Oil Stadium, you could probably have two games going at once because you can split the place in half. You do have, what, Bankers Life Stadium, which is where the Pacers play. It's no longer the Conseco Fieldhouse or whatever it was. You could go to...
That would also be an excellent game to play.
What's that?
Former names of arenas.
Oh,
I still call the one here in Raleigh by the wrong name.
You still call it RBC?
I'm telling you.
You know what? Just be safe and just call it the rest.
I know.
Call it the Raleigh Entertainment and Sports Arena. You'll never go wrong. No, but they could also play where Butler plays. What is that?
Hinkle Fieldhouse.
The Hoosier Dome. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of places around there. Actually, some people that live around those areas would say you could just go to some of the high school gyms that are palaces in Indiana, and you can go ahead and have as many games as you want. So there's a plan in place. It makes sense to do it in Indianapolis. Now the question is going to be, what happens when things start getting postponed and you don't have as much data? Because that's the whole point of the NCAA tournament. How much time do we spend on places like KenPom and the net and everything else trying to argue? If you don't have the data, what are we arguing?
Well, bring the players back from last year and play the 2019 tournament. That would be my recommendation. Because I don't know how many games you're going to get in this year in order to determine who the best at-large teams are.
That's a great question.
It's just not going to happen.
That is a great question. Lauren, what's up?
Oh, not much. If I'm a little loopy today, my bad. I gave some blood not that long ago. So that's the first time I've ever done that. So, yeah, there's a reason they tell you not to do anything physical for, like, however long after you do that.
Yeah, it will make you a little lightheaded, although I didn't know if you were still lightheaded from what the Tampa Bay Buccaneers did to the Carolina Panthers on Sunday.
That was really something, wasn't it? It got out of hand in a hurry.
It
kept going that way.
I'll be honest with you. I was lightheaded after what you tweeted at Eric, your husband.
Oh, yes. He thought he'd have a little fun in my mentions. And I told him, I'm like, if you tweet that at me, I'm going to come back at you.
Yeah, there was
like, that's fine.
There was a catch that wasn't a catch. I think it was Robbie Anderson. And Eric, your husband, tweeted out there was clear separation between ball and man. And you just responded him with, keep it up and I'll show you separation between ball and man. His response was, I think you might need to review that tweet. So it was spicy in the household on Sunday between his Bucks and your Panthers.
It's funny, though, because the real spiciness actually came. You know, I've talked to you guys about the fact that he wants me to dye my hair red. Mm-hmm. And so the bet that we had, and I even gave him like a pretty decent over under. I was going to give him 2.5 punts, but he was like, that feels really low. Well, we're going to punt more than, you know, 3 times. And I'm like, you're not, but okay. And I'm like, okay, 3.5 then. And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, I'm taking the under. Like, there's no way you punt that many times. And he's like, oh, I'm taking the over for sure. Well, my hair is still the same color, as you know. And I would have been able to take the under at 2.5. And feel fine about it because he's like watching it as the game's going on. And he actually like got to a point, especially late, where he's like, oh, we can punt now. We've already won the game. And I'm like, nope, you're still not going to.
Nope.
I promise you, you still will not, because that's just not what teams do against us.
Over the past 4 games, the Carolina Panthers have only forced or gotten the team to elect to punt, I should say, because nobody's ever forced to punt twice.
Twice, 2 times. And I remember them both. I do.
The Chiefs one was both. Definitely late.
Oh, it's late.
Yes, that's why I remember it.
It was like a minute
it stuck
and
out
10
because
seconds
I'm like,
left.
This gives us... Yeah, but either way, it was late. And then Atlanta one was late, too. Both, I think, were in this. I know both were in the second half.
Yeah.
Which is just, you know, it's really something. It's really quite the accomplishment. I think the Panthers might have as many like recovered fumbles as they do opponent punts.
They also keep faking punts too, but that's another story altogether. Lauren Brownlow. I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it's not. I don't mind the aggressiveness.
He got 2 to work, so yeah. I think you're not going to be able to stop him now.
It's like, oh,
work twice?
You mean I can keep doing this in this league? Cool. Let's just fake all the punts. But I think it does show you. I brought up the fake punts, Lauren, to illustrate a point with the Carolina Panthers that I do like. While they are spunky, they do have to pour it all out if they're going to have a chance against better teams. We saw this against Kansas City, a Super Bowl contender, and we saw this now with Tampa Bay. And it turns out that Tampa Bay is the one team in the NFL that manages to blow the Panthers out, because all the other games that they've played have been within a score. I mean, even right down to that Kansas City game. So I like the aggressiveness because it shows you the coaching staff has an awareness of what this team is and what they have to do to try to win, and at least they're trying.
Yeah, I don't mind it. It feels inconsistent, may be the wrong word, but like it remained weird to me at Kansas City when they went for it on like 4th and 15 or whatever it was, 4th and 9. I don't remember exactly. It was 4th and really long.
Yeah,
they went for it. They go for it there, and then every time else, it seems like they're fake punting or trying long field goals. And it's like, you know, sometimes you can just leave your offense on the field because at a certain point, people are just going to be ready for the fake punt. And I'm sorry. I like Joey Sly and all, but he's not making a 65-yard field goal. So, like, let's just stop it and maybe, I don't know, like, just leave the offense on the field if you want to be aggressive. And I kind of thought they should have gone for it a couple times instead of trying long field goals. But, hey, you know, what do I know, I guess. But I'm nitpicking. I do like the aggressive mentality in general. And you're right. It's absolutely what they have to do. Although it should be at least a little bit concerning for everybody. And I know it is for me that they had 35 yards of offense in the second half. That's not great.
Lauren Brownlow, WREL sports fan, joining us here on the OG. And Lauren, fill in the blank for me. The Panthers' next win will come against.
Oh God, I have to look up the schedule, don't I? It's not looking great though. That's the thing. And it's said this last week where I'm like, put Christian McCaffrey on the shelf because you're playing all these good teams. Oh, Detroit.
They can beat Detroit.
Teddy Bridgewater is probably not going to play this week.
Probably not, which is not ideal. Yeah.
So they're not going to beat the XFL. Mahomes ain't picking up a win, peeps.
I see at best 2 wins, maybe 3, depending on what the Saints are doing left on the schedule.
I see Denver would be my answer.
Denver would be my.
They're not good.
I think they will beat Rivera too.
I think they will load it up to beat Rivera.
Will go the opposite.
You do?
We'll go the opposite. Yes. Yes, I do.
Lauren Brownlow, WRELSportsFan.com, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. Lauren is also an AP Top 25 voter. You did not put North Carolina in your AP Top 25, correct?
Correct.
Why?
Because they have 2 losses is one thing. There are obviously 2 lost teams in the poll. There are some 2 lost teams in my poll. However, their 2 losses, again, remain bad. They're bad. I'm sorry. The FSU one somehow aged worse, mm-hmm. and it was bad at the time. Mm-hmm. It has aged terribly. It has not aged well at all. The Virginia loss is different. I know I've talked to you guys about that before. I just think it's a little different because that's a different Virginia team with Brennan Armstrong in there. I think that's a good team. It's not a great team, but it's a good team. It's a solid team, right? Florida State is a tire fire, and you were down 31-7 to them at one point. I'm sorry. That's not good. That's real bad. And I can't just wave my hand and make that one go away, you know, I can't. And there, every other team that I, you know, that I'm thinking about ranking or that I have ranked, because I got some pushback with Teams X only has so-and-so wins over 500 teams. I'm like, but they didn't have a loss to FSU. Mm-hmm. That's the only FBS win that FSU has at this point.
Did you vote for Auburn?
I did not. No, okay. I don't understand that. Yeah, I don't understand why Auburn's in there. They're not a top 25 team, and I don't understand why people are doing that. But most of the other teams that I have ranked, their losses are to top 25 teams, right? That's who their losses are to, or to teams that, you know, aren't Florida State. So I'm sorry, I'm not trying to overly punish them for it or anything. And I actually think you know, obviously I don't think they've played an amazing team yet, but I think a lot of their wins and probably most of them are solid wins, against good teams, not great teams, but good teams. But it's just they haven't beaten any currently ranked teams, and their 2 losses are horrible. It's really not any more complicated than that. Beat Notre Dame, and guess what? You're going to get ranked again, so don't worry about it.
Lauren Brownlow, WRELSportsFan.com, joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias. You and I talked about this a little bit on the WRELSportsFan.com panic room, the ACC panic room. And as it relates to North Carolina and being ranked in the top 25, I think there's a separation of having this incredibly exciting comeback win, 21 points down. Sam Howell either breaks records or matches records at UNC and some in the ACC. Brian Ives, who works at the ACC Network, put together some of the things that Sam Howell continues to do in the fourth quarter, which is insane. I think you had pointed this out on the panic room. He's already where on the touchdowns list in the ACC? He hasn't even completed his second season yet?
I believe he's at 17 currently.
That's insane to me.
Career.
Now, these are interesting talking points. These are interesting factoids. And you have to watch North Carolina play football because it's going to be exciting one way or the other. But I just have this, I don't know, this nagging feeling about them flying too close to the sun all the time, and I don't like that.
Well, I mean, the thing is, too, right? Like, the reality of it is that the defense just sort of is what it is.
Yeah.
The defense is fine, I guess, but... And the other thing is when things go south for them, like they just go really south. That's the weird thing about them. And it usually lasts about a quarter, whatever that quarter span is. I think for Carolina last week, it was basically like late second quarter to like early third quarter was like their sort of sleep time or whatever you want to call it, where just everything went horribly wrong for them. And that part is the concerning part, right? We all know the offense is great. And I think for the most part, you can't really make all that compelling of a case to me that the offense is really like to blame in quotation marks mm-hmm. for anything bad that's happened to them this season. Because when you score almost every time you have the football, you can't really do that, right? But at the same time, it's become a thing where that's the one thing that concerns me for them is like when things start to go badly, it starts to go downhill really, really fast. And then the score gets away from them. And then it does sort of make them have to go into comeback mode. This year, they're starting games better. Last year, they would just go on walkabout the whole first half. Now they're starting games well in the first quarter, especially offensively, but they're not playing as well in the second quarter still. That continues to be an issue. And when you have a defense that is sort of, you know, what their defense is, you can't really afford to have any quarter go badly for you in any real way. And it's not entirely fair to that offense because, again, they're scoring almost every time they touch the football. But, you know, that's just sort of where they are right now.
Lauren Brownlow, WRELSportsFan.com, joining us here on the OG. And, Lauren, the Big Ten has had issues. The SEC has had issues. And yesterday with Miami making their announcement and rearranging their schedule, which affects North Carolina and Wake Forest, it's starting to make me wonder now, why are they playing some of these games? Because I thought this whole season was about giving the players their opportunity. Clearly they've had an opportunity, but like, do we really need Georgia Tech and Miami on like December 19th?
Well, the ACC games are always going to get priority, right? I mean, that's just what it is, but yeah, I mean, I don't know that we do, but I mean, if we get to the end of the year and that's the only game left on Georgia Tech's schedule, and obviously they're not going to a bowl game, and you tell them, well, we're not going to play this game now just because we don't feel like it, like they're not going to be cool with that. And I understand that too, you know? It's like, well, hey, wait, we'd like another game to play. Like, we need to get our young guys reps and everything else. And so, yeah, I mean, like, I get it. It's in the interest of quote unquote fairness. Now, does North Carolina, I guess they end up playing Western Carolina. It looks like they probably are considering where they moved it, but yeah. I mean, do they need to do that? I don't know. Looks like it's going to happen. So, you know, we are in this super weird place where we're seeing more and more games canceled and postponed. And I mean, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to do this, but I guess they're just determined to keep plowing ahead until they literally can't anymore.
I'd love to see the ACC contract with the ACC network anyway, but I bet you there's a minimum in there where you have to play a certain number
probably.
Of games, hence the Western Carolina game. Otherwise, I can't think of a reason why even that game would still be played.
That's my guess too. It does seem like for everybody that's got, I mean, Virginia's playing Abilene Christian.
Yeah, a game
like,
they added. They went out of their way to find and get. I mean,
right. And so, like, I mean, that's kind of where we're at. And that's why I think, you know, when you first saw the stuff come out with Liberty at the beginning of the year where Hugh Freeze was like, oh, we're only testing symptomatic people. I mean, the only reason I could think of that those games were continuing to go on from an ACC perspective is because, yeah, television. So,
Lauren Brownlow, WRELSportsFan.com. It's National Unfriend Day.
Oh, okay.
Have you celebrated by unfriending anybody?
I should. I really should. So, like, is that exclusively a Facebook thing? Or, like,
no,
do I
it's
have
just,
to, like,
I don't know. It might be, it's a Twitter thing. I don't know. Is it better to unfriend somebody, block
unfollow.
Somebody, or mute them?
Oh, you got to go with the mute. Because the mute shows that you really care. if somebody's getting on your nerves, but you don't want to hurt their feelings with the unfollow, you just mute them.
Yeah, but there's also a nefarious angle with a mute in that if you block somebody, you've given them the satisfaction of blocking them. But if
well,
you
that's
mute
where the
them,
soft block comes in.
Yeah.
Right. If you, I was thinking of like somebody that I would that I do follow that I would normally be following, like a media member or something, tweets are starting to get on my nerves, like that's where I just go with the polite mute instead of the unfollow.
One of these days I want to reveal local media that we've muted.
Oh God.
Yeah, no, I want to make this happen.
You do know the soft block, right? Because the soft block for people in your mentions that you don't like, you block, then you quickly unblock, and then you mute. Because the block makes sure they don't follow you anymore, and then you mute them. Yeah.
Pro tips.
I learned this from our friend Michael Felder. Yes.
Well, Felder knows. He knows the angle. He knows all the angles. Lauren Brownlow, WRALSportsFan.com. All right, we'll talk to you Thursday.
All right.
Joining us on the Heister Automotive Group Hotline, Brandon Bishop, former NC State football player, safety. He joins us now on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovius. Brandon, appreciate the time, man. The reason why we're bringing you on is because I felt like you had to talk through it. You tweeted through it. I feel like you got to talk through it. DeAndre Hopkins of the Arizona Cardinals pulled down a Hail Mary pass from Kyler Murray, and he jumped through three guys to get it. It was an incredible catch. People are still talking about it today. And you tweeted out a photo with, like, I've seen this before. And there you are, jumping up. And I see your name on the back of the jersey, Bishop. And there's Nuke Hopkins jumping past you to get that ball. You've seen that before, man.
It happens. Show me a DB that's never, you know, never gotten moss, and I'll show you a DB that hasn't seen the field for too long. It happens to the best of us, Joe.
Brandon Bishop, former NC State safety, joining us here on the OG. I'm Joe Giglio. That's Joe Ovius. And B.Bish, I think what Ovius is not remembering here was that was the game Sammy Watkins was hurt. So Nuke ended up playing, getting five catches, 124 yards, but he would not have been that involved in the offense if Watkins hadn't been hurt the previous week.
Joe, you are dead on. And people forget that, you know, Sammy Watkins was the main guy there. He was, I think, a top 10 national recruit, five-star, all the bells and whistles coming into that season. And DeAndre Hopkins, now we know him as probably the best receiver in the NFL, but he was sort of second fiddle on that Clemson team, at least that year. I think Sammy Watkins had like a dozen touchdowns in 2011 as a true freshman. So I was actually just texting with Glennon and a bunch of our old teammates the other night, and that skill group at Clemson had some names.
It's hard
about DeAndre Hopkins, Sammy Watkins, Martavis Bryant,
Andre Ellington,
Adam
was
Humphreys,
the running back.
Yeah. Andre Ellington, who's still hanging around. So they had some guys, man.
Brandon Bishop joining us here on the OG. And one thing, Brandon, that people remember about that, people forget about that Clemson team. That was when they were mortal, right? They were number 7 in the country. This was 2011. And they weren't the juggernaut that they are today. But that is also an historical game and one you should hang your hat on and tweet about. And that was the last act of Clemsoning. That's the last time they lost to an unranked team, I believe, as a top 10 team. You guys beat them 37-13.
Yeah, I that sounds about right. And, you know, it all comes back around because the next year in 2012, I think they hung about 60 on us at their place. So
62. We'll,
who's counting?
62, yeah, perfect. Thanks, Joe.
Brandon Bishop joining us here on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias, and Brandon Bishop had tweeted out this photo of DeAndre Hopkins jumping up, very similar to the Hail Mary catch that everybody's been talking about the last 24 to 48 hours. So, look, I know you still watch, man, and he's clearly not the same guy. I mean, clearly there was something there back in 2011, but he's not the same guy he is today. There's a reason why a lot of NFL observers are wondering what the Houston Texans are doing by getting rid of a guy like that. So what have you picked up on between 2011 and where Hopkins is today?
Well, I mean, physically, he's a bigger guy than he was back then. I mean, he came into Clemson pretty wiry. I think he even played basketball early on at Clemson, but obviously just transformed himself into an absolute stud and probably the best receiver in the league. Strong hands is the thing that stands out to me. When you're in traffic, when you're in those kind of situations where you're going up in the air, and there's two or three DBs there, and there's, you know, four or five or six hands right around the ball. Like, you have to have really physically strong hands to come down and snatch that ball. And yeah, when I see him play, it doesn't get into his chest a lot. Like, you see some receivers, they catch the slant and the ball hits them literally in the numbers. Almost never happens when, you're watching DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, he snatches that thing out of the air and, you know, sometimes makes some DBs look kind of silly in the process.
Brandon Bishop, and former NC State safety, joining us here on the OG. Brandon, actually, I think the last time I saw you was at the NC State Notre Dame game. And was that 2017, right?
Yeah, that absolute balmy day in South Bend.
So I'm curious, and I'm sure you followed Notre Dame more now that they're in the league, well, in the league this year, but play more ACC games. Were you surprised that they were able to hang with Clemson and then beat Clemson? And what do you think of their chances against Carolina next week, next Friday? Obviously, it'll be a pretty big game here in the Triangle with Notre Dame at number two in the country. And Carolina not ranked, but obviously fairly talented all across the ball on the offensive side.
Was I surprised?
Yeah.
No. Is anything surprising this year?
No, it's not. What's
surprising this year, and Julio, we've spent a good chunk of time talking about it this season, you can tell which football teams are in it, or at least caring with all the things that are going on, and some that understand what are we doing here. I mean, Louisville is just the latest example where they had one of their running backs opt out while there's still plenty of time left. And that's up to him. That's perfectly fine. But I don't envy coaching staffs. I don't envy what Dave Doran's trying to do with a team that's not really playing for anything, as opposed to, say, what's going on with Notre Dame or even what's going on with Carolina right now.
No, I agree. It's a weird year. You've got circumstances that head coaches, teams have never dealt with before. And, you know, the Notre Dame Clemson game was just a classic example of it. You know, you don't, if you look at that schedule, even a month ago, you could never predict, you know, Trevor Lawrence, Heisman Trophy finalist and, you know, maybe winner here is going to be out for that game. So it's just impossible to project in a year like this. And, you know, I have seen Carolina put up points each week in bunches. I've seen Sam Howell spin the ball down the field. He's got tons of weapons on offense. It should be a great game. And, you know, I will say, I think, you know, Brian Kelly, he takes a little bit of flack from the media, rightfully so, but, you know, he's built a strong program, and it seems like it's working out in the conference's favor to have this friends with benefits relationship that's going on here this year and maybe moving forward.
I have a feeling that Notre Dame's going to be a runaway bride, though. They're not going to stick around for the actual ceremony. Brandon Bishop, former NC State football player, a Boca Raton guy. We appreciate the time. We'll talk to you later, Brandon.
Thanks, friends.
There's a mess in Philadelphia as it relates to the Eagles. They're still debating about Nick Foles versus Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson, the head coach. He's up to his eyeballs and problems. And if you know anything about this sports talk radio business, winning Super Bowls is good. But you know what else is equally good for sports talk radio? Dysfunction. And that's what's happening in Philadelphia right now. Take this conversation with Doug Peterson, the head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, with WIP radio host Andrew Cataldi.
Who do you blame the most for the Eagles' 10-point loss to the Giants? 72% coaching.
Head coach of the Eagles, Doug Peterson. Hi, Doug.
Good morning, Angelo. Thanks for the lead-in. I appreciate that.
I'm sorry. That was
awesome. I know. That just puts me in a great mood today. Already in a good mood. Yeah. I appreciate it.
I kind of felt you probably wouldn't be in a good mood.
Can I hang up now?
No, please don't, Doug.
I'm feeling my obligation right now. If I hang up, I feel my obligation.
Doug, I fully understand.
I'm pissed off, Angelo.
All right, what about, Doug?
I'm pissed off. I'm pissed off at myself. I'm pissed off at the way we played. And it's just, it frustrates me. It frustrates me to no end. And, you know, it's we have too much pride. And I have too much pride. These players have too much pride. We work our ass off during the week. And you know, it's frustrating. It is frustrating. And, blame it on me all you want. I'll handle it with the players. You can blame it on me. I'm a big guy. I can handle it. That's fine.
That was Doug Peterson, head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles on WIP with Angelo Cataldi. Joining us now, the Heister Automotive Group hotline on the OG alongside Joe Giglio. I'm Joe Ovias, the other Joe Giglio of WIP Sports Radio up in Philadelphia. Joe, I guess the last kind of yesterday and today have just kind of taken care of themselves when it comes to Philadelphia sports talk, huh?
Yeah, no, last week was the proverbial firing squad on the quarterback after four turnovers against the rival Dallas Cowboys. And then they play the other rival, the New York Giants. They look terrible. So, yeah, it's open season right now on Doug Peterson here in Philadelphia.
I guess winning a Super Bowl is only going to take you so far. So what has been the biggest issue from a magical season that everybody remembers? Heck, my wife still rocks her Philly koozie from the Super Bowl, right? What has happened from that point on? What decisions have gone into this disaster that we're seeing unfold?
Well, I think it's really almost like a win curve type of thing. We think about a team and their odds to win or their chances to win. And the Eagles miscalculated theirs. It's funny, when a team wins out of nowhere, you think they're beginning their rise, right? That was the 2017 Eagles. In fact, Doug Peterson in the Super Bowl parade called it the new norm, like as if we're going to do this every year in Philadelphia. When really you look at the age of that team and the players that really were the stars of that team, especially the ones that won the Super Bowl, that team was not built for sustained success for years and years. And the next 2 years they got older. They kept investing in older players. They wanted to try to keep the window open. They went 9-7 both years, made the playoffs, and it was like, all right, they're pretty good. They got a chance. But then they made a pivot this year, guys. I'm not shocked at what's going on now because they made a conscious effort to get younger, to change this thing over, to build the next Super Bowl winner. So none of this surprises me, but I think people might look at it and say, boy, they're in big trouble. I think some of this year is by design, but that's not good enough for fans who are very upset right now.
The WIP, Joe Giglio, joining us here on the OG. And Joe, all that being said, by my math, they can go 5-10-1. And win the NFC East. Am I wrong?
No, you're not. And I still think they're the favorites to do that. Now, the Giants look like a better team right now, and they beat them on Sunday. But the Giants have to play the Ravens still play the Steelers, still play the Cardinals, and they have to finish one game over. Right?
Yeah, they
got
to get to six.
Tie.
The Giants have to get to six. Yeah.
Right. The Eagles have that tie, which might end up putting them in the playoffs. Ironically, in 2008, the same exact thing happened when Doug Peterson was not here, but Andy Reid was. I mean, obviously, Doug came from Andy, but same thing happened. They got in the playoffs that year on a tie. So, yeah, they can still win this division. That makes all of this conversation very interesting and odd at the same time because so many fans have decided this team stinks, want to turn the page, yet they might have a home playoff game in about, 8 weeks now.
Yeah, the two teams who have made the NFL playoffs with a losing record both won their home wild card game, Seattle in 2010 and the Panthers here. They were 7-8-1 in 2014. And won their home playoff game.
So hope,
yeah,
maybe?
You're right. I mean, and they could win a game, right? That happens in the NFL. It's funny, that Panthers team was still 7-8-1.
Yeah,
they won
8-1.
A playoff game. And then the next year, I believe, was their great year when Cam won the MVP and they went to the Super Bowl. So, who knows what can happen. The NFL is a crazy sport.
Joe Giglio, the other Joe Giglio, WIP Sports Radio up in Philadelphia, as the Eagles continue to be a bit of a dumpster fire right now. And Doug Peterson, the head coach, has gone trending because of an interview he did on WIP yesterday. All right, so I am curious if – correct me if I'm wrong here, because I stated this last week when there is yet another Nick Foles-Carson Wentz debate that was unfolding because of Brett Favre and his comments on ESPN's First Take. The impression that I have of listening to you guys when I do, y'all are over the Nick Foles-Carson Wentz thing, right? Like, that's not really a conversation point anymore?
So the actual debate itself between the two quarterbacks is not. Here's where I lie on it, guys. Carson Wentz should be a lot better than Nick Foles. And the fact that he's not right now is a problem.
Well,
Foles is towards the bottom of the league. And here's – it's almost become a different debate as the time has gone on. Because if you go back in time to the moment, right, the pivot point, right, when the Eagles had to make that decision after the 2018 season, they made a double whammy of a decision. They moved on from Nick and decided they were going to, kind of stay the course with Carson, the guy they drafted. It was logical.
Yeah.
They not only did that, they paid Carson Wentz before they had to. And I'll throw it back at you guys now. Nick Foles is not a good starting quarterback. Right now, neither is Carson Wentz. And what I always bring up is, like, the alternative reality. If they had kept Foles on a way cheaper deal than Wentz, and traded Wentz away, they at that time, they probably could have got, I don't know, multiple number one picks for what people thought Carson Wentz was. So it's not so much the decision. It's almost like this alternative world of what could have been, because right now this is not good.
Yeah, maybe that's the case. And Joe Giglio from WIP joining us, because the way I interpret it is the way the conversation's going nationally, it's an either or, as though Nick Foles would have continued to be the Super Bowl Nick Foles. Well, we know better than that. And he's had two opportunities to regain that big Nick energy, and it hasn't happened. I mean, he lost the job in Jacksonville, and it's been an up and down in Chicago. I know he just got hurt here recently, but it's like, I feel like what you're saying is the correct way to go about it. This isn't about Nick Foles or Carson Wentz. It's about, why is Carson Wentz, the guy they invested in, not good, and now what are they going to do? Is it Jalen Hurts time? Is it because you're so bad and you look at the draft picks that are coming up in this draft, you start looking in an opposite direction? I mean, what do you do going forward if Carson Wentz is not the guy?
Yeah, well, that contract right now, and Carson in general, unless he changes the course right now, is an anchor on this franchise.
Yeah.
Because look, if he didn't have this deal, if he wasn't owed, I mean, they can't get rid of him until 2022. Perhaps they trade after the season if they're willing to swallow money, but they can't cut him. Like, they're beholden to him with this contract for a little while here. Like, if he was just on a regular contract or didn't have any time left in the deal, I think there'd be a legitimate discussion to sitting him down right now and giving a second-round pick Jalen Hurts a chance. And that's how bad he's played. And as far as the future here, they drafted Hurts. Guys, the moment they drafted Hurts in the second round, I felt like they had doubts about Carson Wentz. Mm-hmm. And maybe they saw something we didn't see in terms of mobility, athleticism, accuracy, because last year he got him to the playoffs and he played his best down the stretch. But you guys know it like I do. Teams don't look at it like we do. Like, oh, he played well in December, he's the guy forever. I think mm-hmm. they look at the full body of work, and there were signs last year he wasn't going in the right direction. But I mean, no one could have predicted how bad he'd be this year. They're in a really tough spot because of the quarterback.
Joe Giglio, WIP. Hey, man, we appreciate the time. Have fun dealing with the callers the rest of the day. I'm sure it's a lot of fun up in Philly right now.
Oh, I can't wait. It's going to be a good night. Thank you, guys.
Celeste.
Hey.
Hi. Are you okay? How are you feeling?
I am. I'm breathing. Doing okay. Obviously had to make time to do this regardless, so.
Well, thanks. And
it's for you, not Giglio.
Oh, okay. Well, I know you don't want to be around Giglio because you're allergic to him anyway.
That's the official diagnosis.
So, all right. So Celeste works here, and she likes to waste time at the end of the day by looking at Reddit, and there's a subreddit called Am I the AH? Am I the jerk? Am I the bad guy? What have you found today, Celeste?
Yes, I've had lots of time to scroll through, and this is a good one because we've had a lot about relationships, but this one is between siblings, and I'm curious what y'all think because these siblings are parents, and I'm not, so you might have a different opinion.
Okay.
So it starts off and says, my sister and I have always had a strained relationship. I usually just let things go and try to keep the peace. We both have sons who are around the same age. My nephew's 13 and my son is 11. Recently for my son's birthday, I bought him a new gaming system and he was thrilled. My sister is bad with money and I usually have to lend her money for bills and expenses for my nephew. Knowing that he doesn't get the best Christmas presents, I bought him the same game system that I bought my son. Yesterday, my sister's family came to visit and my son asked him and my nephew if they could go play video games together. I said yes, and about 30 minutes later, my son comes running to me and crying. He took me to where they were playing, and I saw the brand new game system had been thrown from the upstairs and was smashed to pieces.
Mm.
I asked my son what happened, and he sobbed and pointed at my nephew. I asked my nephew to explain, and he started to laugh, called it a stupid baby toy, and said that he had seen videos of people breaking it online.
Okay.
So we got
Tide Pod situation.
Got manipulated by the viral videos. Jeez.
Some online influence.
Yeah, no kidding.
I explained what happened to my sister and told her that this was an expensive system and that my nephew needed to be disciplined and they needed to pay for what he broke. She then laughed and said no. She says I shouldn't have let them play unsupervised, that it was my fault and that I'm a bad parent. Seeing my son upset with the broken system, I walked over to the Christmas tree, grabbed the one I had wrapped for my nephew, and gave it back to my son to set up. My sister asked me why I was making such a big deal in the first place if I had two systems, and I laughed and told her the one that I gave to my son was supposed to be my nephew's Christmas gift. And if they thought it was stupid and funny to break, they wouldn't miss it. We're getting spiteful.
I was going to say, we could probably stop it right there. I don't think the person who did this is the bad guy. I don't think they're the jerk in this situation.
The parent of the son.
The parent of the son that had the system broken and everybody laughed about it and it was like no big deal. It's a stupid toy anyway, right? Like all that stuff. So if that's the general attitude, that was the excuse making that was being made for a broken system, well then fine. You don't get it because clearly you don't care. Shoes on the other foot now. So I'm okay with this.
It was slightly jerky to open up the present in front of the kid.
True.
If it was intended for him. Now, the kid who broke it is the actual bad guy in this entire scenario. He's the jerk. He's the real jerk.
Well, yeah, but that's a kid being a kid.
No, it's not.
No.
You don't break a PlayStation or an Xbox
In those situations, that's where I expect more out of the parents, not the 11-year-old. Does that make sense?
Well, right. And if his mom's response was to laugh at that, like when it happened, he's clearly learned this stuff before. So like he's 13 and he's old enough to know better, but I don't think the kid is the bad guy. I think his mom is the bad guy. And I feel like it's not going to help him do better in the future to just like spite him in front of his cousin.
Yeah. And there's a little bit more to the story because apparently like the person told the nephew, like, no, he didn't steal it. The one that you broke was the one for you or whatever it is. And that's just at that point, you're just being vindictive, but I don't mind it. The pettiness is earned in this situation. And now that the family is being all mad at the person who did this with the gifts, I don't think they're in the wrong. I honestly don't. Cold world. If you're going to break a system that you were gifting, and then you're going to act like it's no big deal and you're going to justify it in the kid's case, well then no, you don't get nice things. Simple as that.
I agree with that. And you know what? Maybe if he learns this lesson at 13, then it's not going to happen years down the road. So it stinks now.
Here's the problem. By the time
might be cast there.
Yeah, by the time you get to 13 and you got parents kind of justifying that behavior, I don't know. He's going to have to – there's going to be a couple more of those moments in order for that to change, I think.
Probably. But I do just want to revisit my favorite line in this, which was that he said he saw the people break them online, and that's why he did it. And I think that's the best part. Because it's not even about jealousy of his nephew. It's just about repeating viral things on the internet.
Learn better. Learn not to follow the trends on Twitter. Celeste, feel better. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Yes, please feel better.
Thank you.
All right.
It's time to play You're Full of Shit, Giglio. Listen, I've known Joe has been full of shit since 1975, so this is old news to me. Here's Joe Ovius with the rules, but I can already tell you, Giglio is definitely full of shit, and I should know, I'm his mother.
Thank you very much, Nora. Yes, Giglio's got some trivia. Some of it's true, some of it's made up. It's up to you, the callers, to determine which is which. If you correctly called Giglio out for his BS, you've got a $20 gift card to the original Flying Burrito. As always, you can place your order online for pickup or delivery at originalflyingburrito.com. And we're also excited to let you know that your first online order, 20% off. So check it out. Order today at originalflyingburrito.com. Let's say hello to Sal in Mooresville. Sal, what's up?
Hey, not much. What's going on?
We're good, man. We're good, although it getting dark so soon is throwing me off. Lucius and Fuquay, what's up?
How you doing?
Good, man. The bright side to it getting dark is that the Christmas decorations turn on sooner. So when I get home, my decorations are going to be on. It's very exciting. Don't shake your head, Giglio. I'm very excited about my Christmas decorations. Patrick in Apex. Patrick, what's up?
Hey guys, what's going on?
Have you put up Christmas lights yet?
No, I have not.
A normal person,
dude. Come on, what are you waiting for? Let's go. Let's go. Do it this weekend. You know, put up some turkey lights. All right, Giglio's got some trivia. Some of it's true, some of it's made up. If you think he made it up, shout out your name, and Nora will do the rest.
You're full of shit, Giglio.
But if you think it's true, don't say anything. All right. If you correctly called Giglio out, you win. But if you're wrong, you're out of the game. Last person standing or the first person to call Giglio out for his BS wins. Let's go.
Okay, guys. P.J. Walker led the XFL in passing yards and touchdown passes. That is true. P.J. Walker never lost an XFL game.
Never lost.
Also true. P.J. Walker played for the Dallas Renegades in the XFL.
Moose, Patrick, Sal.
I think that was Lucius first.
Lucius?
Giglio.
I absolutely am, because everybody knows Philip Walker Jr. was the quarterback of the Houston Roughnecks. Congratulations to you, sir. You have a $20 gift card to the original Flying Burrito.
Congrats, losers. Just sit tight. Congrats, sit tight. Jonathan Rand will get your information. And you got that $20 gift card to the original Flying Burrito.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio Show Podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. And you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL SportsFan app. Or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.